Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. First on the docket, could things get worse for Lori Vallow? Second, Epstein still causing trouble for the prosecutors. Third, you decide, unlawful or lawful but awful. Fourth, an update on the Aurora police officers who arrested an entire family wrongfully. Six, Houston narcotics cops are charged with corruption, and our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. If you haven't already done so, we'd ask that you hit that subscribe button. Leave us a comment below about what we talk about today. Hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And as a reminder, we will be going live tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. Mountain Time right here on YouTube and Facebook. Let's get straight to the docket. That's right. Lori Vallow. Could things get worse? Well, a lot of people sure hope so. Many people are still waiting for authorities in Idaho to charge Lori Vallow with the death of her two children, Tylee and JJ. Well, there's some news, if you want to consider that, out of Arizona. The police in Arizona are saying that they are now investigating or continuing their investigation of the death of Lori Vallow's ex-husband. As you may recall, in July of 2019, Charles Vallow, the now ex-husband of Lori Vallow, was shot to death by Lori Vallow's brother, Alex Cox. Alex Cox claims that, yes, I shot Charles Vallow, but it was in self-defense because he tried to hit me with a baseball bat. A lot of people don't think that that's necessarily true. And given the fact that so many people have wound up deceased that happened to be around Lori Vallow, the police in Maricopa County are looking into the matter further. Well, they've been looking into it for a while, obviously since roughly July of 2019. And they say that it could be up to another 6 months. So we have some news that's not really news. Well, what are the police doing? They're looking at the digital data. They apparently have come across or subpoenaed some 10,000 pages of digital documents, digital data that they can look at and see if there's anything in there that would be able to show evidence of a conspiracy between Alex and Lori to show that they were trying to kill Charles Vallow. I don't think that the police are going to be able to come up with anything at this point. We're talking now some 2 years later, and yes, I know cold cases are solved all the time. But if this was a huge priority to the police in Arizona, they would have been on it much faster. It certainly helps everybody when Lori Vallow's name is back in the paper. However, this was a story that is a non-story. So I don't think that the Arizona police are going to be able to come up with any charges against Lori Vallow as it relates to the death of her ex-husband, Charles. I know some people may not like that. I get it. A lot of people don't like Lori Vallow, but you still have to be able to charge the case with the evidence that is not only readily available, but also admissible in a court of law under the rules of evidence. Certainly gets harder as more and more time goes by. We'll just wait and see. Next on the docket, Jeffrey Epstein still making trouble for prosecutors. And guess what? Today is the anniversary of the one-year date from when Jeffrey Epstein was suicided. What can you say, ladies and gentlemen? That's right. Jeffrey Epstein died August 10th of 2019. And here we are. Where has the time gone? Now, yes, we somewhat facetiously say suicided. Why? Because we'll never really know for sure whether he in fact committed suicide or whether he was murdered. But maybe someday. Now, clearly the facts show that it would be very difficult to strangle yourself in the way that he did with the sheets that he had. And it also is rather suspicious that perhaps the police officers, the correctional officers, just happened to miss all this stuff, miss their rounds. So there's lots of conspiracy theories for sure. I personally think that he more than likely committed suicide, but somehow people were paid off or were told to ignore what was going to take place. We'll never be able to know for sure, but that's why we will continue to say suicided. Did Jeffrey Epstein get up and say, I'm going to be suicided today, or was he murdered? We may never know for sure. But on a more positive note, that's right. Day 39 of the Ghislaine Maxwell suicided watch. No one has decided whether she is going to commit suicide or be murdered just as of yet. We'll continue the countdown. Now, the 11th Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals has said that they will take another look at the previous ruling regarding the dismissal of charges as it related against Jeffrey Epstein. As you may recall, Jeffrey Epstein had federal charges as it related to procuring young girls. Those charges were ultimately dismissed in the federal system, and Epstein pled guilty to a sweetheart deal. And if anybody says it was not a sweetheart deal, they're lying. All right. When you're looking at going to federal prison for doing bad things to young girls and you plead guilty to attempted prostitution and solicitation and you go to county jail where you can be on work release and out of your cell for up to 16 hours per day, that's a sweetheart deal. Now, apparently, Jeffrey Epstein still thought it sucked because he had to plead guilty and he had to go to jail. The big issue, and the victims of Jeffrey Epstein say that now former Labor Secretary Alex Acosta, who was the then United States Attorney down there in Miami, dismissed this case without notifying victims. Now, and in the federal system, it's called the 2004 Victims' Rights Crime Act. And what does that really say? Now, victims do not have control over a case. But the Victims' Rights Act clearly states that individuals who are considered victims have a right to be notified of the proceedings. They have a right to be notified of the offers that are being made to the defendants. They have a right to know when the court proceedings will take place. And they have a right to know what the final disposition and sentence would be of the defendant. Well, in this particular case, then United States Attorney and former Labor Secretary Acosta dismissed the case in federal court so that Jeffrey Epstein can plead to the state charges. Now, the victims in the federal system were rather upset and said, hey, you can't do that. And it's really kind of a moot issue, which means there's no legal issue at hand anymore because Jeffrey Epstein is dead. And this 11th Circuit Court of Appeals originally ruled and said, we can't really help you out much because the case was dismissed. What would you really like us to do? We're sorry about that, and we regret being able to do that, but that's what judges have to do sometimes is deliver bad news. Remember, when you go to court, there's usually a winning party and a losing party. Somebody's going to lose. That may sound cold. That may sound harsh, but that's what happens oftentimes. There are winners and there's losers. Rarely do people both come out winners in the legal system. Needless to say, now the entire 11th Circuit has agreed to hear the matter en banc, which means all of the judges on the 11th Circuit will hear it instead of just a three-judge panel. Once again, even if the victims were to win, it would be somewhat of a hollow victory. It's not as though they're going to get any relief against Jeffrey Epstein because obviously he's dead. People are already suing his estate. What does it mean? It would say that the United States attorney acted inappropriately. Would it be unlawful for him to do that? Do you think anybody's going to prosecute the former United States attorney for dismissing the case? Pretty unlikely. We'll just have to wait and see what the 11th Circuit rules. Next on the docket, there's been a lot of talk these days about police misconduct. We've talked about lots of cases. Now, every time we talk about a cop incident, I get told, I'm unsubscribing from you because you're not pro-cop. And then I'm told, usually in the same video, you're pro-cop, I'm unsubscribing to you. I understand it. But ladies and gentlemen, if I'm upsetting both people on the side of the argument, one would think that I'm presenting it fairly because both sides are upset. And that's what we've always tried to do. We don't always have to agree, but we can agree to disagree respectfully. Now, I've always said there are great police officers out there. There are great special agents out there. And like any profession, there are the bad ones. And I have always said this, and you can go back, and long before everybody was crying out about police reform, who was saying it? Yeah, this guy, saying the problem with the bad cops is that the good cops don't try to get rid of them. They know who they are, but they allow them to stick around out of some sort of false loyalty. Well, hopefully that will change rather quickly. Because if you allow that one bad apple to remain, guess what? One bad apple can ruin the whole lot. Today, we have two cases where you decide, was it an unlawful shooting by the police or was it lawful but awful, which means it's unfortunate, but it was a lawful shooting. You decide. The first one we have is a case out of Arizona, and it involves the death of a gentleman by the name of Ryan Whitaker. Now, apparently, Ryan Whitaker lived in an apartment complex, and the neighbor above him did not like loud noise that was coming from the apartment. So this unidentified neighbor called the police and said they're being noisy. The dispatcher asked if somebody was being physical, and the unidentified caller stated something to the effect of, if it makes the police arrive faster, I believe it may be getting physical. Well, that changes the whole nature and complex of the visit by the police. Now, instead of just going to a guy that may be playing his stereo or video games too loud, they're going into a potential domestic violence situation. Well, as you can see from the video in this particular case, the police knock on the door. The gentleman, Ryan Whitaker, opens the door and finds Officer John Ferragamo and Jeff Cook standing outside their door. Of course, they've moved away from the door, which makes it impossible to see if somebody's outside. Mr. Whitaker, not knowing who's outside, but heard somebody identify themselves as police, which could be a ruse if you live in a less than stellar neighborhood, for a home invasion. Mr. Whitaker opens the door, has a gun in his hand. One officer believes that he says, whoa, whoa, whoa. And guess what? The other officer, Officer Cook, opens fires three times, shooting Mr. Whitaker in the back. You get to see the video. Take a look at that. Lawful but awful or completely unlawful? Let me know. The second case comes from the great state of Utah, where this gentleman, apparently while intoxicated, was having an argument in a parking lot in Salt Lake City. As you can see, he has a knife, a very long knife, up against a woman's neck. When the police arrive and they say, let her go, he doesn't let her go. This suspect then actually pulls the victim closer. The police attempted to talk the suspect down, saying that wasn't worth it. Don't be silly. Just chill out, so to speak. He doesn't do that. And when he pulls the victim closer, police open fire and kill him. Lawful but awful or completely unlawful? Let me know, both in the Arizona case and the Salt Lake City case. Leave me a comment below. Let me know what you think. What does this clearly show? It shows that police make decisions rather quickly. Life and death decisions just like that. And it can completely change not only the police officer's career, as well as the people that are killed, obviously. And it's easy to sit back and second guess and say, ooh, they should have done this, they should have done that. But that's what we do in the legal system. We get to play a certain armchair quarterback when it comes to these types of circumstances. Now, I was in the military, and listen, if you can tell a Lance Corporal what the rules of engagement are, that you don't fire unless you are going to be actually fired upon, otherwise you know you're going to be court-martialed, the military is able to do that. They drill it into their heads. There's very limited rules of conduct. The rules of engagement for the police seem to be a little more confusing. If the officer simply feels in fear, are they trying to save the individual's life? There's just a lot of gray area. But guess what? There's a lot of gray area in life, and that creates circumstances where people make mistakes. Sometimes mistakes that cost people their lives and their careers. Let me know what you think below. All right, next on the docket. Remember the case we brought you last week? Brittany Gillum, 29, mother of one of several girls and an aunt who were all put on the ground in an Aurora parking lot at a Walmart because the police officer thought that the motor vehicle was stolen. Oops, it turned out that the plate was actually from a different state and went to a motorcycle. Well, a lot of people are upset. Miss Brittany Gilliam, as well as her family, have all retained an attorney by the name of David Lane. David Lane is an exceptional attorney. He will more than likely maximize the pain for the Aurora Police Department and reward these people for having their constitutional rights violated. You don't get to put people on the ground at gunpoint and realize, oops, it's a mistake. Those kinds of mistakes, guess what? Sound expensive. And the district attorney that covers that portion of Aurora, since Aurora is actually quite large and covers two counties, but it took place in Arapahoe County, George Brockler, that's right, the district attorney who prosecuted the Aurora Theater shooter case, says that, quote, if our investigation determines that the officers involved committed a crime, I will not hesitate to file charges and prosecute them, end quote. I intend to investigate this matter thoroughly and without appropriate haste, George Brockler went on. We'll see if any crimes were committed or if perhaps a financial sanction against the city is more appropriate. Somehow I think the city is already getting their checkbook out. They're just not sure of how many zeros to put on the check. Take a look at these former detectives in Houston, Texas. The grand jury indicted six former Houston narcotics officers that the district attorney, Kim Ogue, announced. In total, there are 17 felony charges, including falsification of search warrants, fraudulent reports of drug purchases, and phony overtime claims. The indictment paints a picture of shady practices, lax supervision, that enabled veteran Houston police officers Gerald Goines to instigate a deadly 2019 raid based on a drug sale that never happened. All six defendants, three officers, two sergeants, and a lieutenant, worked at the Houston Police Department's Narcotic Division, which, according to the internal audit, has been plagued for years by sloppy record-keeping and loose oversight. Goines, who was employed by the Houston Police Department for 34 years, already faces state murder and records tampering charges, plus federal civil rights and obstruction of justice charges in connection with the January 28, 2019 raid, which was authorized to be a no-knock warrant that Goines obtained based on fictional heroin purchases and resulted in the death of Dennis Tuttle and Regina Nicholas. The couple, who lived in a house, were alleged to have been selling drugs. When the police arrived, they discovered no evidence of drug dealing whatsoever. Former officer Stephen Bryant already faced state and federal charges for record tampering as well for backing up Goines. Sergeant Clement Rania, faces three counts of tampering with government records based upon false statements similar to the one Bryant is accused of making in December of 2018. Rania claimed to have witnessed Goins' payment to a confidential informant for a drug purchase. Prosecutors say cell phone location data shows that the meeting never happened and that the informant identified by Goins, again, the same person who supposedly bought heroin from Tuttle, denied participating. Rania is also charged with a theft. Sergeant Thomas Wood is accused of making false claims to have witnessed Goins' payment to a confidential informant. Lieutenant Robert Gonzalez is charged with misapplication of fiduciary property, a felony punishable by up to 2 years in jail, for reckless handling of the police department money. The police chief is still being quiet as it relates to this particular situation and saying that it is an isolated incident. However, he did initially say that Goins was a hero right after the shooting and has yet to retract that information. Now, like I said earlier, there's good cops and there's bad cops. But one thing I've noticed over my years of practice is that where things get real shady are the vice and narcotics bureaus, whether it's people doing stings, reverse stings for solicitation for prostitution, narcotics. Things seem to get a little fast and loose, and the paperwork never really seems to go along with what's happening. Maybe that's because most of that stuff takes place during the evening hours or early morning hours when there's not a lot of supervision taking place, and it's kind of the wild, wild west. So when you hear about stories like this, it never surprises me that it comes from the Narcotics Bureau. Oftentimes, these officers believe that the ends justify the means, which means if we have to lie a little bit to get the bad guy off the street, that's okay. Well, the truth always comes out. Sometimes it just takes a little while. And before we get to our dumb criminal contestant of the day, let's talk about our criminal background check. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Go to crimetalksearch.com. Sign up for your criminal background check subscription so that you can search anonymously anyone you would like here in the United States. You can pull up social media information, telephone numbers, email addresses, criminal history, bankruptcies, civil court records, marital records, as well as civil judgments. If there's one thing that we have talked about, ladies and gentlemen, is you need to know with whom you are dealing with. And I personally use this subscription at my law office. On nearly every case, we run all the witnesses who will be testifying as to criminal history. And there are subscribers that have sent us information. Take a look at this woman. Said that she was getting romantically involved with an individual, signed up for the subscription, and found out that the gentleman had a history of charges relating with wrongs to minors. At least she found out, ladies and gentlemen. You owe it to yourself. If you're going to be getting involved romantically with somebody, maybe you're going to be doing business with somebody. Find out who they are. We've had people say, I was going to go into business with somebody and found out they had a history for fraud. Those are the type of things you find out. There's a small fee that you get charged, but you can cancel at any time. But to have that resource available to you, you'll be happy that you did. Go to crimetalksearch.com and sign up today. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. But first, let's get to our dumb criminal contestant of the week last week. That's right. We only had two dumb criminal contestants last week because of our schedule. First was Mark Gray, the man who broke into the bank and only stole hand sanitizer. We have 82-year-old Carrie DeVan, who was cited with DUI in a single golf cart accident when Mr. DeVan hit a tree. And Mr. DeVan's defense was that Trump made him do it. That's right, President Trump made him do it. Apparently, Mr. DeVan became so irritated by watching the president's press conference that he began to drink and drink and drink, whereupon he got into his golf cart in the adult neighborhood and ultimately was in a single golf cart accident. That's right, Mr. DeVan, You are our dumb criminal contestant of the week, and I will be using my background subscription service that can be found at crimetalksearch.com, getting your information and mailing to you a Crime Talk mug. Because, Mr. Devan, you deserve it. Maybe just put a little cup of Joe in here this time and not a little adult beverage for sure. Now, if you would like to get your own merch, hit the link below. You don't have to become a dumb criminal. And frankly, you can get lots of cool stuff. So go check it out. Now, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And anytime we have a dumb criminal contestant, we like to bring to you a little tidbit about the law, something I've learned over my 25 years of practice. Well, it sounds a little cliche, but you've all heard the saying, the criminal always returns to the scene of the crime. Well, that's right. That's what happened to Mr. Brian Duffy. He's a 40-year-old man. He has an extensive criminal history, but he apparently was quite upset with the 7-Eleven clerk the other day about the cost of his frozen treat, the Slurpee. Well, ultimately, he backhanded the drink that was being held with the attendant, and some of the Slurpee slush got on the attendant. The police were called, but Mr. Brian Duffy had left the store, so they were unable to apprehend him. But that didn't stop Mr. Duffy. Oh no. That's right. He came back the following day to get himself another Slurpee, whereupon the clerk called the police and said, "That's the same guy that slapped the Slurpee from me the day before." Well, guess what? Mr. Duffy talked to the police. And although he doesn't really recall what took place as it relates to the Slurpee slush being placed on the attendant, he does recall having a discussion about the cost of the Slurpee. So, Mr. Duffy, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day because A, you returned to the scene of the crime. B, you talked to the police. All right, Mr. Duffy, had you learned anything, if you'd watched the Crime Talk series here, you would know not to talk to the police. Now, you talked to the police and said, "Well, yes, I was there, but I didn't hit the Slurpee onto the attendant." Guess what? Don't care. You just corroborated half the story, so the police are going to believe that you are telling the truth on the part that corroborates the complaining victim's story, and it's obvious that you are lying about the rest. Oh yeah, and Mr. Duffy, they apparently could tell that you were in fact lying because there's video of the entire incident. Mr. Duffy, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Congratulations. If you can keep it up, you can be our dumb criminal contestant of the week, which will be announced a week from today. Thanks for watching Crime Talk. We appreciate everyone who watches. We've had a couple of really great months where we have had between 1.7 and 1.9 million views per month. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We know there's lots that you could be doing, and the fact that you take the time to watch us does not go unappreciated. Thank you very much. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk. And don't forget, we go live tomorrow at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Hope to see you there.